Vivian Fazzulla has lived and worked in Tibooburra on and off since the 1970s. She first came, as many do, as a young traveller looking for adventure in the Australian outback. She ended up staying on, managing the local health service and marrying the son of a camelier. She has become a keeper of the many different stories that make up the region's history. But before we can sit down for an interview at the health service, we have to shoo a cow off the front lawn.
Hang on, so there's a cow about to come through the fence.
So the people in the town are allowed to have animals on the common, right?
Like there's a cow and a goat just yeah. right outside right now.
One of the unique problems a health clinic in Tibooburra faces.
So that's why we've got this big fence.
There you go.
I came to visit a friend in 1976 who was here with her husband. He was working for Telstra and he was putting in a microwave link along the gas pipeline, and he'd been here a long time and she was getting bored. I was between jobs, so I decided I'd come up and visit her, which was good. Got to see a bit of the area, and they were living in a caravan outside the pub. I don't know why they weren't at the caravan park, which was up and running then, but anyway, that's where they were. So we got to see some interesting characters. We came up to the hospital as it was then. It was an 8-bed hospital. And matron opened the door, introduced ourselves, and she said, "Oh, you've come to work." And I was, "Nope." She burst into tears and said, "I haven't had a holiday for 2 years." And as I was between jobs, I thought, "Oh, yeah, we'll do this." So it was really good. There was about 4 or 5 girls in the area who were nurses, but no one who had worked full time. So it's a fledgling 24-year-old. I became a matron, which was pretty awesome. Blew my friends away. Who was still scrubbing the pans at the back of the hospital, wherever they worked. And yeah, so that was pretty cool. And I met Azzy, my husband, and he was working around here. Eventually got married. I was here for over 2 years, and then we moved to Victoria. I was a bush nurse at the Dingy Bush Nursing Centre. I was there for 36 years, retired. We used to come up here all the time for parties, rodeos, whatever else. And so we were here for the rodeo. I was bored and I asked someone, was there any work? And the girl that was here wanted to leave, so luckily all the due processes went through and I got the job.
So 30 years later you ended up back here?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nearly 40 years, yeah.
Azzy was an interesting character. What's his story?
Azzy's story. So his dad came from what was India, which is now Pakistan, on the border of Afghanistan. I can't remember what state it was, but... And his name was Zaidullah Fazzulla, and he came with the camels. Elders had bought camels from India, Pakistan, and shipped them over here to their many properties they had in South Australia to help open the country up, because the terrain was too harsh on the horses and the mules and the oxen, the bullocks. So his dad eventually ended up with Broken Hill as his base, and he met Crasher Maud Noab, whose name I just really love. And they went on to have 14 children. There were 7 boys and 7 girls. So Azzy was the 3rd son and the 7th child. His dad lived well into his 90s, and probably about 5 of the siblings lived into their 90s. Azzy was 91 when he passed. And yeah, so the longevity was there for them.
So, what was Crasher's story? What's this name and who is she? What was her story? It's a bit hazy.
No one can sort of figure it out. Well, there's people in the family that have delved into it. She was part Irish. I don't know whether she was part Afghan or not. I haven't seen anything concrete, but she lost her mother when they were coming here, or when she first came here, and her dad remarried a Mrs. Williams and had more children. But I guess these things weren't talked about, so, and there's no written history, and the oral history's got lost, sort of thing.
I imagine life as a Camelier with 13 children out here at that time.
Fourteen
children as a Camelier in Australia. What was life like for them?
So I guess it was pretty harsh. They enjoyed life. And I guess once you've had a few children and they've got older, they then help look after the young ones. So it's not a trial that you've just been given 14 to look after in one go. So his father came with his camel teams up through to Tibooburra into Queensland, over to South Australia, and bought provisions and mail up and took wool and whatever else back to Broken Hill to move on. There's a picture that we've recently found from the Adelaide University. There's lots of memorabilia about camels there. It's a big exhibition over in Port Augusta about the camels. And there's a picture of his father who was probably it was taken in 1920, so I'm guessing he was in his 20s, sinking a dam with his camels on Olive Downs, which is now part of the Sturt National Park. Amazing. And I thought, oh, Azzy would never have seen that picture, and it was taken well before Azzy was born. And I wonder if he remembered his father looking like that, because any family photos I've seen, he's an older man sort of thing. So his father came up doing that, and they had a shop in North Broken Hill, and the mum, that was part of the house, so the mum had a shop there sort of thing. There was a lot of charity that went through the Afghan community, which was quite large in Broken Hill, and they just helped so many people.
Did Azzy ever go out with the camel teams with his father? Was he still doing that by the time he was around?
Yeah, so the camels sort of finished their main business in Broken Hill in the 1930s. So when Azzy was a child, he and his older brother and one of the sisters would go out to Silverton and his dad have a weekend. I think it was his way of his father of keeping these boys in control, and they had to give camel rides. So people would go out and pay sixpence a ride or something like that. So they ran the camels up and down the creek bed, and the sister cooked for them, and then Dad would come back Sunday night and take them back into town. Yeah, they're amazing beasts sort of thing. The loads they carried, the pictures that I've seen, and carrying a piano, like a grand piano, the amount of wool. They might have 20 camels in a team and carry enormous tonnage of wool on big carts and things like that.
Did Azzy have any stories about the strange things that his dad carried?
Yeah, roofings. You know, most of the places in Broken Hill and up here were made of tin because it was the lightest and it was readily available to cart. It might have warped a bit, but it didn't. If it was concrete or brick or whatever, they'd break and things like that. They'd move houses, pulling a team, you know.
With a camel pulling.
With camels, you know, a multitude of camels. Yeah, amazing how strong they are. And they just fed on whatever vegetation was around, so that you didn't have to buy hay and magnesium licks and all this sort of stuff. They just, yeah, it just fed themselves sort of thing. They were really well looked after. There was a huge settlement over in North Broken Hill, and that was the camel camp, they called it. And a lot of people in Broken Hill are connected to that, whether they were from North Broken Hill and were part of the kid gangs. Yeah. As he had three tattoo circles and he was a camel camp warrior.
Wow.
And I check out people's arms through their veins, but I check and you often see the three dots.
Camp warrior kids. Mm.
So they would have cricket teams or footy teams and stuff like that, yeah. When we were at Dinghy, Azzy was somehow got connected up with someone who had a team of 20 camels. And they were owned by a lady who was from Melbourne, and she wanted the camels broken. I don't know where they'd gathered them from. And so the man that was doing it didn't want to do it anymore, so Azzy took over breaking these camels in, and we got a paddock, and he had them for about 12 months, and he'd walk them around the district.
So wow, so he still had it.
Yeah. So a couple of other blokes helped him. I think he would have been in his late 60s, early 70s when he's doing this.
Wow.
Yeah. One day, Ros was at school, and it was an area school where everyone was bused to school. I get this frantic phone call, "You better get out of here, as he's here with his camels." So when you went in the school, there was a big central lawn, and the buses came in and around, sort of thing, and then the school buildings were out here. There he was in the central, all these camels, those kids. I said, "Are the camels sitting down?" "Yeah," I said, "it'll be okay." So, and they had all the kids behind the barrier. But so she had the best show and tell. We don't reckon anyone will ever beat that one. And so these camels, some went to Cable Beach. So if you ever go to Cable Beach and ride on Betty originally came from this group that Azzy had.
Wow.
And some went to the Hunter Valley, and the others just sort of got sold off around. Yeah.
Amazing.
And Azzy had a camel that he got from a station up here, brought it back as a little baby on a bottle. He named it Zelika, and that's the name of one of his sisters. She was not happy, but... But anyway, Zelika was with us for a while until she cut a leg on a fence, and that was ultimately the end of that poor thing.
Mm.
But yeah.
So it sounds like he felt a real connection with camels the rest of his life.
Yeah, because that, well, I guess it was the main thing in his life, sort of thing, wasn't it, when he was younger. And they stick with you, don't you, your past and all that. And he was really proud. He was really proud of that heritage, he really was.
Mm.
And he never thought, woe is me, I'm a third class citizen, second class citizen, or anything like that. If he was ostracised because of that, well, you don't deserve me, and he'd just move on, sort of thing. Yeah. When, as he was 14, he went droving with a man from over near Port Augusta somewhere, but who was working all in this area. So he grew up the life of a drover and a camp cook and a horse tailor, and in between droving jobs he'd work on properties, being a fencer, and just every gamut that a bushy would know, sort of thing. And so when the camels cut out and that, his older brother, he took on trucks. So he sort of carried on the bringing the supplies out, taking the things back, and sort of kept that going.
Mm, trucks, the modern day camels.
Yeah, way back in the 40s or whatever it was. Yeah, pre the war.
With fuel prices at the moment, we might have to go back to camels.
Yeah, that's right. As his other brothers worked in around here, and then two went to Port Augusta, but yeah, they sort of still kept, they're very family orientated sort of thing, and yeah. I find this quite interesting, and that as his mother was brought up a Catholic, whereas his father was a Muslim, and he was the mullah at the mosque. And so the boys went to the mosque of a Thursday night for prayers, and the girls went with the mother to the Catholic church on Sunday, but the boys had to go to that as well. But that made for interesting discussions for me personally about our religion and that sort of thing. So we both had the same ethos, but there were just a few things that Azzy chose not to, like he abstained from pork and cultural things.
I asked before, what's the best thing about living out here? What would you say is the hardest thing, or one of the hard things?
The tyranny of distance. I like that term.
Mm.
Yeah, from... But it's changed now because of technology with regards connection to your family and friends. In the 70s, I'd have to book a call to my mother.
Mm.
So I had a block, say, 2 o'clock Sundays. If she wasn't there, well, I'd have to wait till next Sunday to talk to her because the lines were so... And then marrying up with what she was doing the other end, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now you can FaceTime. You've got your family sitting in your hand. It's amazing sort of thing.
Mm.
The kids that I have here working now, the grads, they get homesick, and I say, hey, you know, in comparison to what happened in the 70s and earlier sort of thing. Well, as his father came out in the 1880s, he never went back to India. The only people he spoke to was His nephews were on a ship in the war, and he went to Sydney and met them. But he never went back. My grandfather came out from England. He never went back. He came to Victoria. And when the phones came on, he wouldn't talk to them. He'd write letters and read the letters that came back, but he wouldn't even talk to his family in England. He just couldn't.
And it had been too long.
Yeah. Mm. He was in the First World War. He was an Anzac. He was repatriated to England because of some illness he had. So he saw his family then, so about 1916, and that was it. So, you know, that's how people lived. They just left, and wherever you left from, no one knew where you went or what it was like. And if you're lucky to be able to write a letter, you were right. What about the people that couldn't read and write? Mm. You just disappeared, didn't you? I don't think people understand the hardships of travelling in the heat and the wind and the dust and things. A lot of them aren't prepared to bring their medications, or they leave the coast with having chest pain and expect us out here. And they've travelled past several tertiary hospitals where they could have got help, sort of thing. Some of them think the pure air up here is going to cure them or not. I find that frustrating. Frustrating that to get supplies and food and things like that, you can't just get it today, sort of thing. And if it rains, even though we've got the beautiful new road, the roads are still closed because the creeks come down and it all silts up. So, but then you just deal with that. You're prepared that the place could be shut down. I think a couple of months ago, we were shut for 10 days. So, but then we're lucky we got the flying doctor that will come in. And if you need be, they'll bring you what you need, sort of thing.
So you still get cut off, even though the road's been bitumised since, you can still get cut off from the rain.
Yeah, because they only put one bridge in, and that was at Packsaddle.
You mentioned when you first came out here, it was a hospital. It wasn't always here, and it wasn't always like this. What's the kind of health history for Tibooburra? Did they have a hospital early on?
It was a tense sort of arrangement, and in the late 1800s, they built a hospital, and it was opened on January the 1st, 1891, by Mrs. Downey. And I find that pretty awesome that a woman was given the honour of laying the foundation stone and all that. She was, with her husband, owned what's now the Family Hotel, and he died, but she carried on operating. I think he did the hotel, and then there was a store. She did the store, and when he passed, she opened that. So she must have been a formidable person, I think. There is a photo somewhere, and she looks like she's a bit feisty, so she probably kept everybody under control.
You'd have to in that time in a pub like that, I imagine.
So the building we're in now, sort of the first bit at the front, it was open in 1938. I can't find out when it changed from a hospital to the clinic, but it's more than 30 years ago, apparently. So now we've just had a refurbishment where the place was repainted, security doors and things put in place, rooms made bigger for disabled access and things like that. So it's just an awesome place to work with magnificent heating and cooling system, so it can be a horrible day outside, and here we are in nice inside.
You wouldn't know.
It's run by New South Wales Health, and we provide Monday to Friday, we're open, and outside of that, 24/7, we provide emergency care in conjunction with Ambulance New South Wales. We've got 8 volunteer ambulance people in town, and they do regular training. They're dotted between here and north of Packsaddle, so, and then people out on the road towards Cameron Corner. So if there's an incident out there, they can get there. They've got their own car and equipment, and they can start stabilising the people until we can turn up. The bulk of our other work that we do here is in conjunction with the RFDS. So they support us 24/7 for emergency calls. There they've got a 24-hour service. You talk to a doctor, and they'll do retrievals. Depending on what the incident is, how long they can get here, and the planes and their stuff sort of thing. And they also run clinics. Our clinic days are Tuesday. We have a GP, we have mental health workers, and then we have alternating practice nurses, podiatrists, physio, dentistry, and a couple of times a year they have skin specialists, audiologists, and optometrists come out. Other than the dentist, it's all free, so anyone can come. And it's just a fantastic service. The people of the town really appreciate it, and on the properties they really acknowledge the fact that they can come here. They don't have to drive that 3 hours.
It would make a huge difference.
Yeah. Mm. And the fact that there's a nurse here 24/7 virtually, it gives them great comfort, and that's why it's an awesome job, because you can help people. If you can't physically help them, you can advise them. I try and give people 3 choices. You can ignore what I've just said. You can do as I say, or you can go away and have a think about it, and then you can come back. Even if you ignore what I say, you can always come back and we'll have another go at it sort of thing. But, yeah.
That's your options.
Yeah, I'm directing the traffic sort of thing. but all the doctors and all the allied health team and that from RFDS are amazing. Being a nurse here, we're really well supported by New South Wales Health. There's educators, people, if you don't know something, you just ring someone in Broken Hill and they put you on the right track. They're really supportive with everything.
As people are on the road and making their way out to places like this, it is obviously a comfort to know that there's health services here. But do you have advice? Are there things that people can do to better prepare to make sure they don't need to access these services, or that they're prepared when they do need to?
Well, I don't think they understand, because this is turned and funded as a hospital, but we're not a hospital. So we don't have a pharmacy, we don't have an on-site doctor, we don't have x-ray, we don't have, we're sort of like a triage place. We have emergency drugs, but we're not allowed to hand them out unless it's needed sort of thing. So the basic things they need to do is make sure they travel with water, drive to the weather, obey the signs. When the sign says road closed, it's closed. Don't travel on it. But they do. And they get bobbed. And it's thousands of dollars fine. So don't travel on the road if it's closed. And if it's a nice sunny day, the road's closed for a reason. It's either still sealed up or there's still creeks running. Bring your medications, and don't come if you're unwell. You're not going to get better by breathing Tibooburra air.
Is that something you hear?
Yeah, all the time. I had one man come and he wanted pharmacy, and he said, but you're a hospital. I said, no, but we're not, but that's what we're called. Oh, well, I'll go to Innamincka. And I said, there's nothing at Innamincka. He said, there's a hospital there. I said, yeah, but it's a museum. He argued with me and I said, I'm sorry, I can't help you. You'll have to go back to Broken Hill. And then people whinge because, all right, they've left their script or lost their script or whatever. So we'll get your doctor to send a script to Broken Hill Pharmacy and it'll come up Tuesday or Wednesday. But this is Friday. I said, well, this is how people here live. You've got to be better prepared. I think another thing is they get here, they're having a really good time, but they don't have enough drugs with them. Well, bring more than your 2 bob's worth, or bring your scripts, we can sort that out. You know, just little things like that. That's what annoys me about travellers.
Yeah.
I think they need a big sign on the Tibooburra Road just out of Broken Hill that says, do not go past here if you've got chest pain, you don't have enough drugs, you haven't got enough food, and you haven't got enough water.
What's the most rewarding thing about being a nurse out here?
Just being able to help people. It's awesome. I reckon as a nurse, if you help someone have a peaceful death, you save their life, you help get a child over a hurdle, you help a new mum get over that hurdle, you earn your pay. A couple of years ago, it was stressful because I'm not a midwife, but I had 2 ladies go into labour here.
Wow.
And that was scary, but the RFDS got here really quick and they delivered about an hour after they got to Broken Hill sort of thing.
Yeah, wow.
And so, you can't get hung up as a nurse by that. You just got to deal with what comes through. the door.
So would you say it's a lot more hands-on work?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the backup. Like in Victoria, if there's a major car accident, well, they're there, the police are there and everyone's there sort of thing. Whereas here, for the police, if the police person's not here in town, you've got 4 to 5 hours from someone from Broken Hill to come. Yeah, so I think because there's more backup ultimately in Victoria in comparison, and you didn't have to make decisions because they were higher up the food chain, so those people made the decisions.
As people are driving through this countryside,
yep.
Are there any things that you'd tell them to keep their eyes peeled for?
The animals, all the animals are wild. Even if the cow's got a tag in its ear, it's not your tame cow Bessie walking over to be milked every night. Be wary of them. They can make a real mess of your cars. Don't speed because you can go around a corner and the road could be washed away, the sealed bit. If you're off the sealed bitumen, you don't know whether you're going to hit a whole heap of corrugations or a whole heap of bulldust. That's where you're getting. Just drive sensibly. Don't be focused on getting from A to B fast. Just look at the beautiful contrasts. I don't know whether you notice coming up. Every hill, every bend, it's different. It can be a bit of green grass here. You go around a corner, it's all stone. And then there's a heap of trees. It just changes the whole time.
Are there any particular spots you'd recommend people go and check out?
Just everywhere. It's just awesome. If you're a photographer, this is the best place in the world for sunsets. The colours on the granite outcrops that's around. The Sturt National Park, it's got some amazing walks and to look at. There's just amazing things everywhere. If you open your eyes.
Thanks to Vivian Fazzola for her generosity sharing stories and history with us. I'm Amy Volkovsky. This episode of Meet the Locals was produced by Bushwitch Productions in collaboration with Jason King Media for the Sturt Steps touring experience. Sturt Steps is a touring route that covers over 1,100 kilometres in Corner Country, outback New South Wales. This project is funded by the New South Wales Government and administered by the Milparinca Heritage and Tourism Association Incorporated. For more information, head to the website at www.sturtsteps.com.au.